Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca. We are helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We have an amazing guest today. His name is Brendan Kumarasamy. Welcome to the show, Brendan.
Rebecca, the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yes, it's so great to have you here. You are someone who is very renowned in the field of communication, and we are going to talk about how to master your talk. So let me tell my audience a little bit about your incredible background. So Brendan is the founder of Master Talk. He coaches executives and entrepreneurs to be top 1% communicators in their industry. He hosts a popular YouTube channel called Master Talk with the goal of providing free access to communication tools to everyone in the world. Brendan has coached executives from major companies like Salesforce, Amazon, IBM, Morgan Stanley, Verizon, Blue Cross, Deloitte, and many, many more. So, Brendan, tell us a little bit about your origin story. How did you get into the type of work that you're doing?
Yeah, for sure, Rebecca. So my origin story started in college. So this is 8-9 years ago. I never wanted to be a communication coach. I didn't know that was a profession. I actually studied in accounting, funny enough. That was what I always wanted to do because I was really good at numbers and I was really bad at everything else. So I went to business school for accounting. And then in my first semester of college, I started competing in these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, Rebecca, but for nerds. So other guys my age were like playing rugby or soccer or cricket. Some other sport you probably wouldn't see me playing. I did presentations competitively, mostly just to get a job at one of the big four accounting firms. But then as I was doing these competitions and as I got older, I started coaching the other students on how to communicate so that they could win competitions. And I accidentally developed a talent for communication coaching. So when I was 22 and I started working at IBM, I was kind of just watching, you know, podcasts of different communication experts on YouTube and on social media. And I was listening to them and I was going, you know, because I coached so many people, I probably coached like 50, 60 people for free, just in college for fun. And I noticed a couple of gaps in what they were sharing and a couple of tips that I had in mind that nobody else was sharing. So I just started making YouTube videos. I called it Master Talk, and the rest is history.
So it all took off when you were providing free YouTube content. I really love that, Brendan, because you did this just to be of service, and people started to follow your coaching and they became, you know, wonderful communicators. So what was your first success story?
Yeah, my first success story. So there's two versions of that question. The first one is like the first student I worked with in competitions. But my first paid client was 9 months into when I started Master Talk. So I started in January of 2019, and my first client was in September of 2019. The story behind that, Rebecca, is I went to Summit of Greatness, which is an event in Columbus, Ohio, hosted by a podcaster named Lewis Howes. And I've been a fan of his work for a long time, and I always wanted to attend his event. So I go there, and I just like coaching people for fun. Like, even if you meet me in person, I'm just asking you about your dreams and going like, oh, what did you think about this or that? So naturally, I was doing it with everyone at the conference because it's just my personality. And one of them wanted to hire me as their coach. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, I'll pay you money to be my coach. And that's not really a term I really understood because I had just done it for free for so many years until 2019. So I just started helping him. He used to work at Amazon. He started a real estate company. And he lacked a lot of confidence when he was sharing ideas with the world and in investor decks and when he was talking to his employees. So I helped him get rid of his ums and ahs, open his eyes more, bring that voice projection. And now Ludomir is doing very well in his life, Sam. Grateful.
Wow, that's fantastic. So how can people master stage fright? You know, fear of public speaking is the number one fear. I don't know if it's the same in Canada, but in America, the fear of public speaking is worse than death. So people like to joke, people would rather be in the grave than delivering the eulogy. So how can people overcome their stage fright?
For sure, Rebecca. So the frame that I always take is I've always believed, and this is a controversial opinion, that the number one challenge of public speaking actually is not fear. I think fear is number two. Number one is motivation. Why do I argue that? The reason I say that is because there's so many things in our life that were really hard that we were deathly afraid of doing. So I'll list out some examples. Immigrating to a new country, right? Getting your first job, asking somebody on a date, getting married and having children. These are all things that are ridiculously difficult. And yet, we still do it. So now the question is, why? Well, the reason is because the motivation outweighs the fear that that task is associated with. So if I give you the example of dating, yeah, a lot of us, I'm sure, are scared to put ourselves out there and ask people on dates. But the motivation of not being alone our whole life is greater, at least for most of us, than the fear it's associated with. Same thing with immigrating to a new country. That's scary. You're going to a brand new country. You don't know anybody there. You have $20 in your pocket. So why do you do it? Because your motivation to create a better opportunity for your family and for your children is so much greater than the fear. So you do it. But when we think of communication, Rebecca, the challenge is we have the fear, but there's no motivation associated to that fear. So it's like if I ask people, you know, why do you want to be a great speaker? They go, oh, you know, I don't really know. And that's really the key. So for me, the best way to overcome fear is to find a motivation greater that helps us do some of the simple exercise we'll be learning today and push through it.
So I agree. It's important for people to find their why. Why are you an entrepreneur? Why do you want to meet your soulmate? Why do you want to do anything? They say to have a why that makes you cry, something that you can get out of bed with, something that you're so passionate with. So what is your why, Brendan?
For sure, Rebecca, that's a great question. You know, my why is I believe the next Oprah Winfrey, the next Elon Musk is probably a young girl or boy who can't afford a communication coach like me. Because when I was 19 years old and I started working on this, there was no videos back then on how to speak. So I would just watch TED Talks every morning. Obviously, couldn't afford a coach to work with me back then. Today, I have a bunch of coaches for a bunch, and as you do, I'm sure. So that's the key. But I really wish that the next generation of people who come up, well, they come up growing up to my YouTube videos and my social media content. That's why me and my media team, we invest so much time and effort into growing Instagram, to growing YouTube. Not because I get some clients from it, but today, you know, most of my business comes from word of mouth, right? It's like executives who like worked with me and then they tell all the MBA program friends about me. And that's how I get clients these days. But really, the mission of what I do is how do we empower the whole world to be exceptional communicators? And how do we create frameworks and ideas that make communication easy to understand and easy to implement?
Speaking of frameworks, what are 5 tips to be a great public speaker?
For sure, Rebecca. So let's start with an analogy, which is communication is like juggling 18 balls at the same time. So one of those balls is eye contact, one of them's pacing, one of them is smiling, one of them is facial expression, storytelling, and it could get really overwhelming really fast for people. So what I always ask to myself is what are the 3 to 5 easiest balls that one can juggle? And I call my first three, and I'm happy to give a 4 and a 5 as well, called RQV. So let's go through RQV. Mm-hmm. R stands for, which is ball number one, the random word exercise. So you pick any word you want. It could be a phone or cell phone or battery pack or headphone, something that ideally has nothing to do with your expertise. And you create a 60-second presentation out of thin air. So if you take a word like cup, give a presentation on the word cup. So the first couple of times you do this, you're really scared, but over time you get a lot better at it and it serves 2 key purposes. Number one, for those who are taking notes, if you can make sense out of nonsense, you can make sense out of anything. So you can talk about
that's tweetable. Wait, let's pause the podcast. If you can make sense out of nonsense, you can make sense out of anything. And that's why the first key is random. That's what the R stands for, to have a random speech about anything. Okay, awesome. All right, keep going.
Absolutely. And then the second purpose of the random word exercise, Rebecca, is small talk. You know, a lot of us struggle with small talk, but what is it at the end of the day? It's two strangers having a conversation and going through a list of questions that either person prepared for, like neither of them did. So if you do the random word exercise, you have a cup and a xylophone and all these random things, it's going to be easier for you to think on your feet when you're just having regular conversation with people. And I've seen that a lot with the people I've worked with, and even people who just do it. Like, you know, if you just do it 100 times, I get texts all the time, and they're just a lot more confident. Number two, Q, which stands for the question drill. So when I got started, Rebecca, I mean, it was a few years ago. I'm a little bit better on podcasts besides the fact that I talk too much, so I'm not a good host. I'm a better guest. But when I was on my first couple of shows, I remember how scared I was. And how, because I was really young at the time when I started internet shows. I think I was 21 or 22. And some guy asked me, Brendan, where does the fear of communication come from? And I looked at the guy and I was like, I don't know, man. Tokyo? New York City, you tell me, man. And I was really embarrassed because I didn't know the, I know it now, but like at the time I didn't. So what did I do differently? And I'll throw it back to you, Rebecca, for number two, is every single day I answered one question that I thought the world would ask me about my expertise. But if you do that once a day for a year, you could do this with job interviews, you could do this with like, tell me about yourself or something. If you do that for a year, you'll have answered 365 questions and you'll be bulletproof.
There you go. So where does the fear of public speaking come from?
Yeah. So there's different theories on this. Some that are more academic based, some that are more research based. I use more anecdotal examples to explain this. So let's think about it, Rebecca. Where do we start for most of us as human beings? Whether you live in the US, whether you live in Canada, whether you live in India, where do you start presenting in a formal setting? And the answer is middle school. Exactly. Yeah. Right? Bang on, right? School, middle school, high school. But here's the catch, Rebecca. All of the presentations we do in middle school where we're starting to learn communication in a formal way has three fundamental problems, major problems to them. The first one is all of those presentations are mandatory. So you don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, Rebecca, you want to get breakfast and present all day? Nobody says that. Nobody does that. Number one. Number two is you never get to pick the topic. So it's never, hey, Rebecca, hey, Brendan, what are you passionate about? Are you passionate about abundance, about helping people live a balanced, beautiful, abundant life? No, you got to talk about Shakespeare and poetry and the Renaissance. So it sucks. And number three, which is the worst thing of all, and it so shocks me that people do this, is that every presentation, 100% of them, Rebecca, are tied to a punishment. So if you don't do a great job, not only do you not get your pat on the back, you basically get a slap in the face. Where, hey, by the way, if you don't do well in this presentation, you're going to lose your marks and this is going to happen to you. So we grow up believing over and over and over again through repetitions of hundreds of mandatory presentations, of punishment, of not presenting something we actually like, into believing when we're adults that communication is a chore when it really isn't.
Great. I love it. I would say that fear of public speaking comes from fear of what other people think and caring more about what other people think about you than what you think about you and what God thinks about you, spiritual, whatever you call that spiritual part of your life. So to overcome public speaking and to overcome a lot in life, it's just learn and it's a muscle. Not to care what people think. And I'm sure it's easier said and done, but people fall in love with you when you're being authentic. Even if you like drop your papers or fumble or say, I'm really nervous. I've heard so many speakers say, I'm really nervous. And your heart just goes out to them, you know, like calling attention to, okay, I'm nervous, but I'm excited to be here, something like that. Or like comedians, like they always call out the elephant in the room, right? Like, if they're, you know, have a certain look or accent or anything, they like just call it out right away, get it out of the way. Okay, let's go back to the V. We got R is random word exercise. Q is question. What does the V stand for?
Absolutely, Rebecca. And I completely agree with what you said as well. Authenticity is so important too in presentation. So well said.
Yeah.
And number three is video messages. Video messages.
Oh, okay.
Right. So here's the drill. It's very simple. Pick somebody you love. Pick somebody you love in your life. It could be a best friend from college. It could be a sibling. It could be one of your siblings' child. Doesn't matter what it is. Who it is, I mean. Send them a quick video message. Don't overdo it. Don't redo the video. Just do it once and just say one thing you're grateful for them for. I take this to another level and I call this BVM. So BVM stands for birthday video message. So I literally have a Google calendar that tells me whose birthday it is in my client base or business partners or best friends of mine. And I put a silly birthday hat on that I bought for $15 on Amazon, Rebecca. And I send them birthday video messages. And that's all I encourage people to do. If you do that a few times a day, it's fun. It also makes the world a better place and makes you a better communicator.
Do you do an original message for everyone or just have one video that you send out to everyone?
Original message for everyone. But it's the same script though, but it's a brand new video. So it'll be like, hey, Rebecca, guess whose birthday it is today? It's yours. And then I say one thing that I'm grateful for them.
And you do this every day for someone in your life?
Yep, that's correct. So like this week, we're recording today on March 11th. So there's one person that I have to send a video message to. So I got an easy week. But what I do sometimes, like last week, just so people don't make excuses, I actually didn't do video messages for 2 weeks because I was super busy with clients and I was flying around different places and doing things. So what did I do? I just sent them late. People still loved them anyways. Like I was like, I know your birthday was on February 23rd, but you know, I forgot to send you one. I hope you're doing well. And since the videos take 30 to 40 seconds, sending 10 literally takes 10 minutes. So it's not so bad.
I want to be on your list. Video.
I've never had somebody ask to be on my list. That's hilarious.
Of course. That sounds fun. So sure. What are some keys to a successful group presentation?
For sure, Rebecca. So of course, everything we learned today, just to make this more concrete for the audience, you know, for everyone who's listening right now, your takeaway is book 15 minutes in your calendar every day to do RQV, right? Because the challenge, Rebecca, is not that the exercises we're learning today are hard, right? It's that, let's say I meet somebody on the street or they text me on Instagram. They go, oh, I loved your podcast with Rebecca. I go, cool. Did you do the random word exercise? They go, no, why? Well, if you're going to speak, you got to communicate. So building on the question you asked about group presentations. So it's all that we learned so far, plus three other ideas that I'll give you. And I'll pause after this one so I don't monologue for 10 minutes. So the first...
I'll interrupt you with your first course.
Oh, please, okay. Please.
I'm ready to write this down. So this is, if you're taking notes on this amazing interview, how to give an awesome group presentation with... Speaker coach to the stars, Brendan Kumarasamy. Okay, let's have it. I'm ready.
Of course, Rebecca, I love it. So the first point is what I always tell people is even when you're not speaking, you are speaking. So what does that mean? So let's say you're giving a group presentation, which I define as multiple speakers giving a presentation together, right? So let's say two or three people giving a speech. So let's say it's James, Julia, and Jerome. James starts presenting, he's finished his part, and then Julia starts talking. But because James knows what Julia's going to talk about, he's not really paying attention. He's kind of looking at his watch, he's looking at the sky, he's wondering, man, what am I going to eat for lunch today? And that is a big mistake. Why is that? Because as your audience, when you're watching the team, if James is looking all around the place, the mindset the audience member has is, I mean, James has spent 3 months working on this presentation with Julia. If he's not interested in what Julia has to say, it's probably not worth listening to. So that's mistake number one. Even when you're not talking, be sure you're nodding, you're smiling, and you're there because you're speaking the entire presentation, even if you're not actually talking the entire time.
That's number good one. Distinction. Okay, number one is listen to all the other speakers. Got it.
Absolutely. Number two is as the leader of the group, you're only as good as the person who does the poorest in your group presentation. So it's important, especially for those of you listening to the podcast, I anoint you the leader of whatever group you're going to present in front of. So you need to take responsibility and understand what are the strengths and the weaknesses of each speaker. And what I do when I do group presentations, if I'm doing it with multiple partners, I'll try and figure out what are the parts that they have the least amount of comfort with, and I will take on those parts so that their life is a lot easier when they're presenting. This is especially true in corporate, where you have to give like big sales presentations and you kind of go off of what is everyone else struggling with, you take that on. And then finally, number three is have a robust system for Q&A. Q&A standing for questions and answers. So what does that mean? You could have the best presentation in the world, but if you get to Q&A and your team members and you start disagreeing on the questions that the audience starts asking, you are dead in the water.
Yes.
Right. Dead in the water. So there's a couple of ways you can create a system. There's two easy ways I'll give. One's a little bit more challenging, actually. The first one is really just to proactively manage these questions. So like get some pizza, your favorite lunch, dinner, it doesn't matter. When the presentation is done, before you give it, but it's prepared, and you sit down, you just ask yourself a question. What do I think my audience will ask us about this presentation? And then we brainstorm together. And then we come up with answers. Oh, who do you want to, who wants to answer this type of, are we aligned on what the answer to that question would be? And the second piece is a strategy I teach called Q&A Master, which is very simple. Let's say you have three members who are standing in front of an audience, Rebecca. The best person at answering questions takes the questions. So let's say John in the audience has a question. He'll say something like, thanks for the question. And he'll look at his team members. And this is very subtle. I learned this when I was 19, is that the other teammates, if they wanted to answer the question, they put their hands in front of their body. And if they don't want to answer the question, they put their hands behind their body. So the master knows who's able to answer. So he'll quickly do that, filter and go, hey, Julia, why don't you do it? And he'll equally distribute out the questions. And if both all of their hands are behind their back, the master answers the question. That's it.
There you go. So when you're giving a group presentation and somebody's not paying attention, maybe they're on their cell phone or they're sleeping, do you address that person directly or do you just ignore it?
Absolutely. So the question for you, Rebecca, is that a member of the audience or a team member that is presenting with you?
A member of the audience.
Member of the audience. I mean, I guess it depends on the scenario that we're presenting in. Let's say it's like a keynote scenario. We're kind of like giving a group workshop. I wouldn't address it, but I would more reflect on why is it that people aren't paying attention. I'll give you a common example. Like, for example, when I present my speaking presentations to accountants, I know they don't really value communication that much. They made all their money from crunching numbers. So what I'll do is I'll use a strategy called the mind reader. That doesn't really call them out individually, but calls them out as a group, where I'm starting to read their mind. Example, like I'll get up on a stage and say, I know what all of you are thinking right now. You're thinking, why do I need to learn communication? I'm a numbers guy or gal. I'm spending all my days doing this. Why is this important? And then I give three reasons. Client interaction that go into my spiel. And then they go, oh, this guy gets me. I need to pay attention to what he's saying. So that's the way I would get their attention.
There you go. So how did you meet your business partner, Vamsi?
For sure. I don't get that question a lot. So the way that I met my business partner, Vamsi, was very random. So, you know, we always like to say in business, you got to work hard, you got to persevere, you got to put in the effort, but sometimes luck favors the prepared, right? If you got the right opportunity, you're doing things right. So Vamsi was one of those opportunities. How Lewis's event works, going back to that Columbus event, I met him there in 2019. I was a broke kid, I had a single client. I just had Master Talk and I was working at IBM and I was doing well there. And how Lewis's event works is that every morning there's like a 5 a.m. workout. So I went to it. But let me be very clear because I want to make sure people paint the right picture of me. Brendan does not get up at 5 a.m., okay? Brendan does not work out in the morning. The reason I did it was because I was just curious who else was going to wake up at 5 a.m. Like I always work out in the evening, like 2 to 3 times a week. So I went. You know, I woke up. I didn't want to get up. It was like 4:30 a.m. or something. I was like, God, this sucks. And I come to the event. And the guy next to me was Vamsi. And he's a completely different person to me, by the way. We're completely different. Like, I'm still in my 20s. Like, I'm very high energy. I love partying. I'm a communication guy. He is like 20 years older than me. He is married with kids, beautiful kids, amazing family. He lives in a different country, lives in the States. I live in Canada. He has a completely different personality to me. And somehow we've been working so well as a team, and I'm so, so grateful to have him as my 50-50 partner. And ever since that day we met in the morning, we just started coaching each other, and he realized I was really good at speech coaching, and he gave me my first 10 clients.
That's wonderful. I love collaboration over competition. What does Vom see? What is his area of expertise versus, I know your area of expertise is speaking. What does he coach on?
Yeah, for sure, Rebecca. So he's a mindset and leadership coach. So he does two main things in his coaching practice. The first one is if he likes somebody who's on the rise, he'll help them scale their coaching business. So I have a unique relationship with my partner where he's my 50-50 business partner, but he's also my personal coach as well, right? That I invest in. So it's like a duality. So the fees are the 50% partnership essentially, and it's worked out very well. Once again, surprisingly, you know, the divorce rate on business partners, and he would say the same thing. It's hilarious. So that's the first piece. And then the second piece where most of his business lies is he specifically coaches Indian IT professionals to thrive better in corporate. So let's say somebody is a middle manager at Amazon and they're doing $150,000 to $200,000 a year. They're very successful. They're very technical. But everything else out of their life, which I'm sure you can relate to, right? Since you're a coach in that area, is like it's out of balance, right? Their career, their relationships are out of shape. Their health is out of shape. Like everything's out of shape. And that's what Vamsi fixes for his clients. So when he met me, he was like, I was always looking for an Indian communication coach, like somebody who has the same skin color as my clients, because, you know, those guys are really reserved. So they don't want to work with a coach outside of their ethnicity. So when he found me, he was like, you're young, but I think there's a lot of potential. So he just took me under his wing, and then we just worked out something. And he's the one who said, you could work with a bunch of people in the Indian community. You could charge thousands of dollars for coaching. I thought he was crazy at the time. And that's what ended up happening. Yeah, he was right.
So what is the number one thing that he's taught you that's changed your life?
Beautiful question. Beautiful question. So many things. But if I had to pick one, is that if you work hard enough, some of your 10-year goals can be accomplished in 6 months. Wow. Some, not all. But some. I'll give you an example. So the first, this is the day that I realized I needed to work. Because remember when I met him, like I'm very open on podcasts. I was very immature. Right? I was 20. Today I'm very professional. I'm very good with my clients. They're much older than me, but they really respect me as their coach. Things have went well now. But at the time, you know, when I first met V, that's what I call Vamsi. It's like, you know, I wasn't that great. I was a good coach, but I didn't have the maturity to coach somebody at that level yet. And I was having a lunch with them, like a breakfast in Los Angeles, since you're based there, for Mind Valley. I was there for Mind Valley. And we were sitting there, and he asked me a question. He said, you know, Brendan, what's your dream? And I said, well, you know, I want to quit my job in 5 years. I want to leave IBM when I'm 28 or I'm 29. I want to start coaching these clients. I want to grow my business. And he listened to me. He's a really good listener. He listened to me for 20 minutes, and he's like, why don't you just do that in 6 months? I was like, what are you talking about, man? I just got this IBM job. I did like 3 years of interviewing and networking to get this job. Why would I quit it? And he's like, well, if this is what your calling is, I would challenge you to really rethink your priorities. Because I think the world is missing out on a lot of you in the world if you spend. I'm not saying IBM's a bad company, Brendan. They're great, you know. But hey, if you're spending 70 hours a week, 60 hours a week working there, because obviously it's intense for the money you get paid, that's hours you could be spending with Rebecca on a podcast. That's hours you could be spending coaching somebody else, right? That's hours you could be spending giving a workshop. And he planted a beautiful seed. It didn't take 6 months. It took 2 years, but it was a lot faster than I anticipated. And that was the biggest lesson that I got from him.
And what do your parents think about you leaving IBM to be a coach?
For sure. Yeah, so you, like, what we think the answer is, especially in my community, and it's true most of the time, is they would be against it, mm-hmm. right? Because obviously when you grow up as a traditional immigrant, my parents immigrated from Sri Lanka in the early 90s, and for most immigrants, and I also think it's true statistically, you know, most of the way out for most people is education, right? Become an engineer, become a doctor, become an accountant. And for the first 20 years of our life, there wasn't that much bickering because I actually wanted to be an accountant. It's not because my parents put that on me. So that was a rare situation. And I think what I would say to that, Rebecca, is the reason they ended up supporting me, even if my mom still wears my IBM sweater, she loves it because she doesn't really understand what I do now, right? She's like, communication. She's like, I don't get it, but it's like, as long as you're doing well and things are well, it's fine. It's okay. My mom doesn't need to understand what I do. But I think what I found, this is my advice also to people who have significant others, to people who have kids, to people who have families, or just with their parents, in my case. It's really about creating the actions and the decisions in your life that earns their trust. So yes, did they think my business was going to work? Probably not. Did they understand it? Definitely not. But the reason they ended up coming to terms with it is because the decisions that I've made previous, like my history leading up to that decision, was aligned. I got the degree. I got the job. I paid off our family debt, right, when I was very young. I retired my mom when I was 22 or 23, right? Not because I was rich, because like in Montreal, rent is $800 a month. You just live together. It's done. You just retired, right? So when it was time for me to go, and I was having a lot of challenges at IBM, not because it was a bad company. I love the people. I still love the people. I still have touch with them. But it's like, the work was getting really hard, like the technology implementation, everything's getting very technical. I didn't understand anything. And I was miserable the last 6 months. And I told my mom, I said, hey, look, the business is growing. I made 20, 30K without even doing anything outbound. If I put all of my energy in this, I can make this work. And she said, I'm not really sure, but you know what, son? I trust you. Just go for it. And I jumped ship. I almost went bankrupt, but I made it work. Took a year, but we got there.
Wow, that's a great story. Yeah. So speaking of stories, how do people tell their personal story in a very compelling, engaging way? Do you have any advice on storytelling?
Yeah, great tie-in, Rebecca. So let's start with Les Brown's quote, which is, never make a point without telling a story and never tell a story without making a point. Yeah, it's good. But the problem with that quote, Rebecca, is sometimes when people listen to that the first time, they don't really get it. Like, it took me like a few times. I had to reread the quote like 5, 6 times. I had to listen to Les say it a few more times. And let me translate the brilliance of Les Brown. So what Les Brown means is that every great story, Rebecca, often has a lesson attached to it. We all have that friend in our life who comes up to us and goes, Rebecca, you won't believe what happened last week. And you're like, yeah, what happened? And then like 20 minutes into the conversation, they keep talking. You're like, wait, what happened? Like, I don't get it. Like, where's the lesson? They just keep going. We're just being nice to them. So they keep talking, but you're like, I don't. So we all have that friend, right, in our life, or at least we used to. So for me, the advice with personal stories is to always start with the lesson first. Make a list of lessons or takeaways, whether it's something funny, whether it's something educational that you want to teach people. So I'll use myself as the example. So let's say, which is my key outcome every time I'm on a podcast, every time I'm giving a workshop, even every time I'm coaching a client, it's really the same outcome, which is by the time we're done, I want people to fundamentally believe that they can be exceptional communicators. So that's the lesson. So now we backtrack to what is the story that then ties into the lesson. So there's different stories I've tried, the stories of different people. I tried stats. It doesn't really work for me. It doesn't work for the audience. I got to memorize all these numbers. It's fine. I'll let someone more academically sound than I am do that, who has like a PhD in communication. But then I thought, wait a second, what about my own personal story? Like, which is, in a nutshell, like, if I'm keynoting, it's like a whole 10-minute story. I'm like sobbing, blah, blah, blah. But like in a podcast, I won't do that. So it'll sound more like 3 big challenges in my life. One, I had an accident at birth when I was born. So I have a crooked left arm. Mm-hmm. So whenever I was speaking, especially when I was younger, people would always stare at my arm. They wouldn't look at my face. And that's also true today, but I'm a lot less self-conscious about it. That's number one. The second piece, I have a degree in accounting, Rebecca. It's literally the opposite of speaking. And the third piece is, for those who don't know, I live in a city called Montreal, and Montreal is a city where you need to know how to speak French, which is a language I did not know. But my parents sent me to French school because I needed to learn the language. So my whole life I presented in a language I didn't know. So if I could become a great speaker, I think anyone else can. And that's how you tie both.
That's great. So when you're on a podcast, do you have like a tip for telling your story, like a short version? versus version, which is your keynote?
I love this question, Rebecca. Man, you're great at this. I've been on hundreds of shows. I wish somebody asked me that question. That's such a good one. So I have different theories on this, but the answer really depends on the intention of the host. Depends on the intention of the host. So let me give you one that works 90% of the time, and in a rare 10% of the time, you give the longer version. So in 90% of cases, you want to give what I call the short form personal story. So like, for example, when you asked me about my origin story, I didn't go on a 10, 15 minute monologue about my life. Oh, you know, I was born here. I did this when I was or else you as the host would be like, this is not valuable for the audience. Like, why?
Yes.
Right. Not to discredit that person's life, right?
It's more of course.
Right. It's just about you got to balance both because people are listening to you talk on a podcast. So you need something short. So like when you asked me my origin story, I kept it short, right? It's like, hey, you know, I went to college, this happened. But really what you're asking me is like, how did your origin story lead to the person that you are today and what you're doing today? That's essentially the point.
Yes.
So you get there. So it's like a 2-3 minute version. 10% of cases, actually, I would even say 5%, it's very rare, where a couple of things need to happen. One, you need to be famous enough as a guest where the host, when they ask you a person, you start talking, they don't want to interrupt you because the host, the audience is interested in that story. Example, if you're interviewing Cristiano Ronaldo, he could monologue on 20 minutes per se. You don't even need to ask questions. Like, people will just listen. Like, when J. Cole is talking about his gangster days and the Bronx that he grew up in, or LeBron James is talking about his life in the he could go on for 30 minutes. Nobody's going to interrupt. It's LeBron James. Like, we all want to hear what he has to say. So there's a couple of conditions that need to be met. One, you either need to be famous in your industry, like a Gary Vee. He could ramble for 30 minutes. Nobody would care.
Right.
And which most people, including me, right, are not there yet. We have some fame, but we're not Gary Vee yet. And the other piece is or the host, the intention of the host's show is really to bring out the personal story. So like on some shows, people ask me about my dad's alcoholism, right? Like the dysfunctional family I had growing up, because that's the angle that the host wants to take, right? And they tell me ahead of time, hey, Brendan, like, you know, for this podcast, you know, communication tips are great. My audience doesn't care about that. You've been very successful in your industry. I want to learn more about your dad and your mom. What happened to you when you were a kid? Go into that angle. So there, then I tell the longer version. So it's all based on the intention of the host and respecting that intention.
That is great. So have you given a TED Talk yet?
Not yet. So I've been invited to do TEDx, but the reason I'm not, this is my personal opinion, so take it for what it's worth. Take it for what it's worth. The reason is because my fundamental belief is TED Talks are not as valuable as they were 10, 15 years ago. So 10, 15 years ago, when Simon Sinek gave his TED Talk, it was incredible. Don't get me wrong. I've seen it like 10, 15 times. But the problem is like, with Simon, back then, not many people were giving TED Talks, so the supply and demand curve is very different, and TED is going to push you out. Whereas today, if you do a TEDx, I'm not saying it's not valuable, because I am going to do a TEDx at some point, but the reason I haven't is the chances of that TEDx going viral is very, very low in today's society. So what I'm going to do, because I'm getting those invitations now, as I'm sure you might have already done one, but the reason I'm declining them is I'm waiting for my brand to be big enough so that when my TEDx launches, my audience will make it go viral regardless. So that's why.
That's a great answer. What are some, since you've listened to so many TED Talks and you've coached people on how to give them, what are some tips on how to have a great TED Talk speech?
Absolutely, Rebecca. So let's start with frame and then tactics. Man, this episode is going to be really meaty for people. So I have lots to implement. So the first
thing. I'm telling you, this podcast is top, not 1%, 0.5% in the world for a reason. I get a lot out of my guests. Like, I'm really providing a lot of value to my audience today. This interview is like worth a lot of money. So just go back and listen to it and take notes because Brendan is bringing the heat. All right. So what are some aspects of a great TED Talk speech?
For sure, Rebecca. Happy to provide this. So let's start with the first point, which is what is the point of a TED Talk? So a lot of people don't really understand the goal. A lot of people just do it to get the checkbox, to say, hey, I did a TED Talk. But really, in my view, to do a TED Talk correctly, you are presenting your life's work in 18 minutes. That is what a TED Talk is to me. So okay. Simon Sinek is presenting Start With Why. The reason it did well is because he presented his life's work. Of course, his life's work continued to build on over time, but let's face it, that is the most important idea I'm sure Simon will end up sharing in his career. The golden circle will be legacy. We'll remember for thousands of years, forever. So it's the same thing for you, where you need to take a step back and go, if I had 18 minutes to share my life's work, not just my life story, but my life's work, what would I cover and why? And that takes time to figure out. And usually what I recommend people do is exactly what you did. Like, you build a brand, you learn a lot from clients, you learn a lot from guests, and then eventually, Lewis is another great example of this, where he was worse. He had zero expertise when he started, besides the business expertise he had from building webinars. But then as he's interviewing people and learning, he's going, ah, now I have that 18-minute talk. That's the first piece. That's strategy. In terms of tactics, how do you do this? So I teach, and this works with every presentation, not just TED, I teach a strategy called puzzle, Rebecca. So puzzle is like jigsaw puzzles. You know those jigsaw puzzles you used to do as kids. So if I asked you, it's a simple question. If you were working on a puzzle piece with your family or you're doing a jigsaw puzzle, which pieces would you start with first and why?
The biggest pieces. Because Absolutely. They anchor the rest of the puzzle.
Absolutely, right? Like the bigger pictures of the puzzle. And then the other way as well is some people answer the edges because they're easier to find, right? In the box, you have those little edges, you put them on. Bigger pieces, edges, right? And the problem with a lot of people, what they do, Rebecca, is they often just start randomly in the middle in their presentations. So let's say you have a speech coming up. What do most people do? They ramble. They ramble throughout the whole thing, and then the last slide sounds like, yeah, so thanks. Not the right approach. So instead, what you want to do is you want to tackle your TED Talk like a jigsaw puzzle. Start with the edges / bigger pieces first. Just write your intro, the first 2 minutes, and present that intro 10, 20 times. But Brendan, 10, 20 times is so much work. Your introduction's 2 minutes. This is a 20-minute exercise, people. It's not that long. Same thing with the conclusion. What's a great movie with a terrible ending? Last time I checked, terrible movie. So really take 10, 20 times to really work through the close and use what I call, I'm never going to say 100% of TED Talks do this, right? So I'll always say a majority. What they do is they end with what I call the vision state close. So the vision state close is not like, what did we learn today, A, B, C? It's not like that. They end by helping their audience imagine a world where all of their ideas are implemented in the world. Hey, what happens if we live in a world where, these ethnicities don't get discriminated, or everyone isn't procrastinating anymore, or everyone has the right health? What does that world look like and feel like to us? That's the middle. Excuse me, that's the conclusion. And then the middle, now throw it back to you, is a simple framework to get people started, but it doesn't apply in 100% of cases, called SIT, like sitting down, which stands for Story Insight Tip. Tell a story that leads into the key insight of your main presentation. Insight is tell the key insight which drives the point of your intimate talk. So Simon Sinek is, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And he repeats that 7 times. And then give some tips if you want.
Oh my God, this is so valuable. So you work on your intro, work on your conclusion. The conclusion is usually a vision state of, if your life work was a reality, what would the world look like? And then in the middle, you have your story insight tip. Beautiful, beautiful. So everybody, that was great for any keynote or any presentation. That's incredible. So you've talked a lot about how to be a great speaker. What are some common mistakes that you see speakers making other than the ums and the uhs? And I would say up-talking, I think it's a regionalism in America, or maybe even in, the younger generation, where they end every sentence with going higher, like, high Brendan, nice to meet you. Like, so everything sounds like a question. So those are two that I've noticed. How about you? What are your biggest pet peeves or some mistakes that people can watch out for when public speaking?
Yeah, absolutely, Rebecca. And I love those two. I totally agree with that. A lot of people, even adults sometimes, since I coach so many privately, right? You see them go, did it? And you're like, why are you ending your sentences that way? So yeah, great observation. Couple of other ones I would say I could list off like a bunch, but I'll focus on probably three or four unconventional ones, and then feel free if you want me to dive in deeper, I can. So the unconventional ones are, number one, the speaker does not have enough informal interactions with the person that they want to influence. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're like a professional speaker, you're doing well, you're getting paid to speak, but after the talk is done, you just leave. You're like, I got paid, I'm done, and they just get out of there, which is fine if you got a busy life. But if you really want to be world class, and this is something that I give myself credit, I don't do a lot of things right, but like a couple of things I do right, I do really well, which is my audience is everything to me. Right. So like even when I was starting, I was a broke college student, I was a 22-year-old kid, like, and I didn't have any clients or nothing. The reason my videos resonated really rapidly was because I would sit down, Rebecca, for 3, 4, 5 hours with people I wanted to influence. We're college students at them, today they're executives in the Fortune 500. And it's the same thing. I'm still having the same dinners with them. I meet them in person. It's a lot of fun. So it's not like a chore to me. Like, I'm sitting down with them, I'm asking them key questions. I'll give your audience a few examples they can use if they want. So one is, hey, if you're in my shoes, how would you communicate my ideas to the world? Just to get their thoughts. Like, if you were me, like, how would you do this differently? And I've gotten so much good juice
good
from that.
Question.
Thank you. The second one I got from Kevin Systrom, the founder of Instagram, he says, when I'm coaching teams, I always ask them, if you had to change one thing about my presentation, what would you change and why? And the reason I love this question is because it forces the person to give you a point of improvement. So let's say I'm doing this applies in coaching and anything. So let's say I'm coaching somebody, and at the end of the program, I'll do like feedback calls sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes. And I'll say, if you had to change one class, like if you had to remove something, if you had to change, if you had to, they go, no, Brendan, I like the program. Yeah, I know you like it, but like if you had to change something, and that, then they go, oh, you know, Brendan, week 3 wasn't as great as the other weeks. I would, and then the feedback comes out. But I do that iteration cycle over and over.
So if you're listening, a lot of people listening are scared of criticism. Feedback is a gift, and feedback is neutral. It's not personal. It's always neutral. So Brendan is teaching you how to get more feedback so you can be better at whatever you do. So don't fear hearing negative feedback. It's always a gift.
100%. But also the point you brought up is a really important one. So for somebody who's really sensitive to feedback, and I've seen that a lot in my career too, my advice is start these questions with people that you really like. People you really like. I want to do this with strangers right away, because you're right, a lot of people, like, my tolerance for feedback is super high, and I'm sure yours is too, but you know, for a lot of people it isn't. So that's why I would encourage you to just do it with a friend and then get started. So that's mistake one. I would say mistake two, which isn't talked enough about, is the eyes. This is like the case with 50% of the people I worked with. It's massive. Is whenever people speak, Rebecca, their eyes are always really closed. So if they talk for an extended period of time, their face looks really frozen. Versus if you notice, when I was speaking, whenever I want to say something important, my eyes open up a little. So my whole entire face lights up. So I'd encourage people to really watch their eyelids and opening up their eyelids a little bit more. And the third one is not smiling while listening to other people. Big mistake. See a lot of podcast hosts making that mistake too. And I'll tell you what, you're not making that mistake, by the way. But so
well,
what
I have resting bitch face. I have to smile a little bit, or people think I'm angry at them. So just little. Not
correct.
Like, or distracting you, but pleasant, because I've had to learn. I got feedback that, God, you look so like upset with me, and I'm like, no, I was just listening really intently. So yes,
which is, by the way, but you're the great example of that, which is the feedback I tell people, like, let's say, like yourself at the time, but I would phrase it differently. So I would say in the feedback, I know you're listening really attentively. Like, it's obvious you're taking notes, but it's not even directed to you because you fixed it, but like in general, but from the person receiving, talking, we're just weird as human beings, right? We make up stories that aren't true. So if I look at you like this and I'm talking to you, never met me, just instantly, just your human brain just looks at me and goes, oh, Brendan, all of a sudden, because he's not smiling anymore, he just lost interest in the conversation, when that isn't true, right? So that's probably number three.
Those are so valuable. Brendan, you have given so much value today. Everybody, I hope you listen to this episode again and again. Share it with a friend, because this is gold right here. Please give this episode a 5-star review and subscribe. This is how we spread the word. And how can people stay in touch with you, Brendan?
Absolutely, Rebecca. This is a great show. Thanks for having me. The easiest way to keep in touch is just through Instagram. So my handle is Master Your Talk. So your is YOUR. Just send me a DM and let me know what you thought of the podcast, and I'd be more than happy to send you a voice note.
And you are the one managing your own Instagram account. It won't be a robot. It won't be an assistant. It's really you.
That's correct.
I love it. Everyone, this has been another wonderful episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetize. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for being a devoted listener to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant show. I so appreciate your subscription, your reviews, sharing this podcast with your friends. And if you feel called to work with me on a personal level, I want to invite you to my Elegant Warrior training. It is starting in mid-January. I will personally help you get all 7 areas of your life to a level 10. That includes your spirituality, your emotions, your romantic life, your financial life, get your mindset on track, make sure you have a great community. And this is a 7-week group coaching class. If you want to learn more about it or just meet me, I would love for you to schedule a complimentary breakthrough call. My schedule is very full this year, but I have opened 3 spots this week to talk to you and just see where you need a breakthrough, where are you feeling stuck in your life. Maybe you need to lose a few pounds, maybe you're tired of being single, or maybe you're ready to double and triple your finances. So wherever you feel stuck, I'm committed to helping you have a breakthrough on this coaching call. Go ahead and click the link in the show notes in the link tree to schedule that breakthrough call. And if you're interested in learning more about Elegant Warrior Training, I am happy to talk to you about it live, or you can always reach out through my email. Talk to you soon. Keep rocking your goals and keeping your vibe high. And I'll see you next week with another incredible guest.